The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia, and thank you very much for joining us. I'm Laura Kovacs, and I'm pleased to be here. Kiese Lehman's best-selling book, Heavy, An American Memoir, won the Andrew Carnegie Medal for Excellence in Nonfiction and was named one of the 50 best memoirs of the past 50 years by the New York Times. His other work includes the essay collection, How to Slowly Kill Yourself and Others in America. He is the Hubert McAlexander Professor of English and Creative Writing at the University of Mississippi and a founder of the Catherine Coleman Literary Arts and Justice Initiative. His latest work is a revised edition of his 2013 genre-bending debut novel, Long Division. This evening, Mr. Lehman will be joined in conversation with Imani Perry. Dr. Perry is the Hughes Rogers Professor of African American Studies at Princeton and the author of 6 books, most recently the award-winning titles Breathe, A Letter to My Sons, and Looking for Lorraine, The Radiant and Radical Life of Lorraine Hansberry. Thank you all so much for being here. Now the screen is all yours.
Thank you, Laura. Hey!
Hey!
I'm good. I'm so excited to get to talk to you.
I'm so excited you say yes.
Yeah. Okay, I'm putting up the book for folks who have not seen it in the flesh. 2 sides.
Right.
2 beginnings. Yeah. New beginnings. How you doing today?
I'm happy to be here with you. It was a year ago, almost today, when we had that conversation around Breathe and actually around breathing. I got more energy now than I did then, actually. So I'm ready.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, right? Because we didn't know how early we actually were
exactly.
In this life transforming experience. Right. So everything was disorienting then. And then, I'm not undisoriented, but at least I have my disoriented identity intact in the COVID world. Yeah,
definitely. Definitely. I went back and listened to the talk, and you know, a lot of my friends quote you from that talk, like, you know, a year later, but it was definitely like a murky time, right? Like it definitely felt like the end or the definite beginning, but I don't think many of us thought it might be the middle of something, you know?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to talk about a lot of things in Long Division. I want to begin by saying, I think that it's extraordinary to take an already extraordinary book and then do it again. It's risky.
It is risky.
Right? Because it was like, it was an excellent piece of art already. And you went back in and it's new and it's brilliant. I mean, it's amazing. Right. But that's, you know,
that's scary.
So what I wanted to start by doing is telling you what I think Long Division is about.
Okay.
And then I want you to tell me what it's really about, or if you agree with me, right? Mm-hmm. So I think of this book, which is time traveling, coming of age, story with this absolutely brilliant, smart mouth, vulnerable, insecure Black boy from Mississippi who grows up on the grounds of our brutal history and still living in a brutal condition in with ancestors underfoot and the repetition, the distinction with the repetition, 1964, 1985, 2013, 2015. I also think it's a book about language.
Yes.
How you tell the truth with language, or when it's also a book about lying. It's a book that I think is about how anything can be a slur. Any word can be a slur, depending on how you use it.
Yes.
The difference between lies and big lies, like in the storytelling sense.
Okay.
I think it's a craft guide for me, right? Because you're teaching us how to read, you're teaching us how to write those who came before into our writing, because I could hear, you know, Zora Neale Hurston, Baldwin, Wright, DeBarge, right? Like, yes. Love me.
Which one, though? L?
Yes, I did hear L, right? Yeah. I did, right? L, you know, and then also how you use grief in sentences.
Right.
Right. And so, like, for me, you know, and I've read descriptions, it is a speculative novel because it's time traveling, but it's speculative for me, it feels in a way that's very true, right? Because the tragedies of the past are very much alive, right?
Yeah.
And you can't, at least I can't keep myself from wondering, like, from all the what ifs, right? How things might have been different. What if they had, like, that are part of the condition of oppression.
Right.
In one's own, as you have, you know, city say, in your own house, in your home.
Yeah. Right?
Like, we, there's no, this is our, there's no other place.
Right.
This is where we are. This is our home. Right. So that's how I experienced it.
Yeah. I love that.
Okay.
I love that. I mean, it's definitely that. And I think, if I have to be like just base, I think it's also a book about, you know, Black children and I think Jewish children in the Deep South, about the way they creatively grieve, you know, it's a creative grief. But I'm someone who believes that like hip hop comes out of grief and blue, you know, like grieving doesn't like we do some of our most fun art creation out of grief.
Yeah.
No doubt. You know what I'm saying? And it's also a book that, like, you know, the big question, I'm always interested in asking a question myself as an author when I go into a text. And I think one of the big questions I had to ask myself is, you know, can, you know, possibly lush Black art, like hold Black runaway characters? So I had like this imagination and this dream that I wanted to create.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was trying to push back against, like, you know, master narratives and master narrators and whatnot. So, you know, in my heart, I'm asking myself, what happens when you create a Black book, a Black text, a Black art object filled with runaway characters, characters who want to not just run away from the dominant narratives, but also characters who want to run away from you?
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's one of the questions I'm asking myself with Long Division.
Do you feel like City had more control this time around?
I feel like City had more breath this time around. Do you know what I mean? Like, in a lot of ways, the way that book was published before, the experimentalness of the book was like foregrounded. You know,
you knew from the beginning. This unfolds.
Mm-hmm. Right, and in this one, I actually wanted to have like, you know, I think it still can be read either way, book one, book two. I didn't even want to have book one and book two in there, but. But I think you can read it either way. And at the end of the day, like, what happens when you get to that middle? And you know, you taught me how to think and talk about middles. And I just think sometimes we don't give enough like attention to the middles of much, including books. So in the middle of this book, you know, I don't know if it's the one you got, but in the final joint, you know, like they're under this ground and there's leaves. And there's white space, and what I want readers to understand is like this is as close. This is as close to an adult workbook as you get. You know, there's true false questions that are inspired by SNCC and Freedom Summer and Charlie Cobb, and when they came down, there's essay questions, there's essays, there's, you know, speculative, all kind of speculative shit. So anyway, like I just wanted the actual. I think until we talk about books, we talk about what starts on the first page of a book. But I think actual books are books. Do you know what I mean? And so, like, I just wanted to remind the reader that, like, when they touch this shit or when they see it, the book starts.
Yes. You know? Yeah. The whole, it's an entire, right, because it's all of the senses and the imagination. I love that you I mean, I love that Charlie Cobb is in the book.
Literally.
Right, literally. And also because he was a worker, an organizer, and a writer.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Like asking the questions for us. Right. So he's left us with this bounty, right?
Yes.
To try to.
And you know, when Cobb comes to Mississippi, I mean, there are multiple ways to read what happened. Like, right, like he's bringing this sort of pedagogy of like centering the Black Mississippi student and letting them, asking them to center their own lives and making questions be like the kind of currency, like their questions. Yeah. Dope. But as you know, and I'm sure some people might not know, a lot of Mississippians were like, yeah, but.
What? Right.
Like,
you don't know. Right.
You don't really know us like that. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that book is kind of teeter-tottering on that tension. You know, it's definitely like a internet book, an Obama book. You know, like, I think when the election of Obama happened, I think we did this thing where I heard a lot of people start talking about, oh, what's this going to do for young Black kids? Are they going to start wearing suits? Are they going to start like speaking the community? Blah, blah. Like, but you know, I was working with kids in after school programs, and what we don't say a lot is like, kids didn't really give a fuck about that. You know what I'm saying? And if anything, a lot of times like kids push back against it because their parents acted like, you know,
it was
like,
supposed to make right
the universe, like, yo, it's finna start raining fucking fruit punch. You know what I mean? So put your tongue out and get some of this fruit punch. Everybody, you know, you can wear a whole like outfit made in dollars now. You know, right. Like, and I think students, I think a lot of young people, I would like, were like, okay, but that brother ain't popping to me. You know, it's not a diss. It's no. He's the president.
Yeah. Well, and you know what I love about how you say that is because in many ways there was a kind of adolescent reaction
yes
election on the part of adults
right,
and the children had a more mature response
right
like this is, you know, it's like, oh, now, you know, right, that this is going to change Black life dramatically,
right? And I think people who were talking to me were acting as if, you know, when I was growing up, I mean, Baldwin writes about this, we were taught you could one day be president. And I was definitely one of them kids who was like, oh, that ain't, why? No. You know what I'm saying? Like, why do I want to do that?
Right.
And I think we did this thing where understandably, I just think we did not ask young people, what they felt and what they thought, not just about Obama's election, but about their adolescent reactions from their parents and often grandparents. That's not a diss. I understand why, but I just think there was something we didn't ask. And I think City and I think Long Division is attempting to operationalize like the asking of that question. Like, you know, Obama's a part of that question, but obviously like the generations that we talk about, like, you know, post civil rights folks, Black power folks are much more central to that question than Obama to me.
And you know, it's that. So you also said it's an internet novel, so Obama novel. I think probably my favorite moment and it's in the book too, is when 1985 City travels to 2013 and gets Baze's, you know, a girl in the neighborhood who you find out eventually has a very particular relationship to him, gets her laptop and says everything. You know, being able to type on everything looks famous.
Because
that feeling, right? Yes. Like, and it's, you know, because the world has changed so much over our lifetimes.
Yeah.
Right. But what that, I don't know, can you say something about that? Because it just got me in my.
I get chills, and I'm gonna sound so corny, but you know, we're all corny. But, you know, my mom was a professor, but. You know, there weren't laptop computers and stuff like that. So we didn't have a computer at home. So if I wanted to type anything for school, I'd have to go to work with her at Jackson State. And again, if you're like born after 85, this shit might not make sense. But there was that time that a lot of us, you know, with the first time we typed on a typewriter and or saw some shit we typed on a screen.
Like,
I felt a lot of things, but but I felt mad fucking famous. And what does famous mean? I felt like, oh shit, something I did could last, fam. Like,
right.
So, you know, I was writing for my student paper, and I remember in like 11th grade, I won like best editorial in Mississippi. Mm. And the illest shit is like, I remember when we came back and my basketball coach was also my English teacher. And I remember I had to write some sort of exercise for him. And I used two negative, right? I said something like, ain't no way. And this is after I won the motherfucking best editorial in Mississippi, which was a big deal for like me at the time. And the dude was like, nah, you can't write that. And in my mind, I didn't say this, but I'm like, but that's how I talk. And you know, I know what's correct. Like, right. And it makes more sense in the text. He's like, nah, you can't write that. So what he was trying to do was incentivize me to write myself and ourself out of this literature. But at the time I was just like, bruh, don't you know? Like, I'm fucking famous.
Right. Right. I can
like,
do what I want. You
can't, I mean, I wasn't famous. I don't know before that means. But I'm like, my point was like, that right there is a newspaper. My words are right there. I won an award for it. You telling me I can't write, ain't no? You know, and I'm laughing at that, but that to me is like the energy and like the sort of seed of where long division starts, right? They're like multifaceted attacks happening at Black children, and so many different people who look different and have different kinds of power asking Black children to erase their insides, like incentivizing Black children to write themselves off the face of the earth for prizes, for money, for fucking graduation, for all of these things. And I'm just trying to ask ourselves what happens when we actually pay attention and see that sometimes and often actually kids grieve that shit, which means they don't want to do it. And yep, I think sometimes they create art out of that grief.
That's,
you know,
right. That's absolutely right. I mean, that's the thing for me, you know, the attention. I mean, both your attention as a writer, but City's attention, it's young to the beautiful sentence and the way he thinks about it. And it's not those rules, right? At all. It's beauty, right? And it's a beauty that includes, right, our languages, our music, our, right? And I, and it's also, I know, you know, for me, that's also how I heard it as part of the tradition, right? Because our greatest writers, you know, reshape,
right,
the written English language.
Right. They do. And I think sometimes we don't slow stuff down enough. You know, I think about like Black Lives Matter, not the movement, but the sentence.
Yeah.
Right. And that sentence, not the movement, but that sentence is sort of running up against another sentence, which is Make America Great Again. Both sentences, one could argue both declarative sentences, but one of them doesn't have any room for misdirection or multiple readings. Right. Make America Great Again. You could ask like who, maybe, but, you know, there's some questions you could ask, but there's no intended heft or miss. Black Lives Matter, like, yeah, on one hand, you could be like, Black Lives Matter to people who've not valued Black lives.
Right.
And then you could read that sentence, like, to Black folks, Black Lives Matter, right? That's a different reading, but it's the same words, fam. And so before we even talk about the movements, I think we sometimes need to talk about the sentences that are, like, cradled by tradition.
Yeah.
And the sentences that are also cradled by another kind of tradition. That Make America Great Again sentence is cradled by another kind of sterile, motherfucking direct, abrasive, terrorizing tradition.
Absolutely.
Black Lives Matter, we don't have to talk about the movement, the sentence, fam. And so, like, I just think sometimes we don't break the shit down like that enough to think about the, not just the power or the majesty, but the slipperiness of our tradition. And slippery doesn't mean, like, you know, sneaky, but thank goodness we're still learning that reading prophets. I mean, Prophets of the Hood was like, you know, you talk so much about like the staid slipperiness of our tradition,
right?
And I'm trying to write like directly into that shit in Long Division in that experiment.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, and I think, you know, that's the only, I don't, had we not developed that, I don't know how we could have survived at all. And I don't mean to say that romantically, because many of us didn't survive.
Right.
But I mean, you know, the subversion, turning things on its head, that, you know, the reinterpretation of what we told was the meaning of this whole thing.
Right.
Right. It's like, That's essential. And it is essential on a daily basis.
Yes.
Right? Like, it's not just like you have
yes.
to every day you go out in public.
Right.
You and have with, to have, yeah.
And when folks carry our traditions that way, particularly young people, I think we just have to double down and triple down on not, you know, tending to those children in ways that are constricting, but making sure that the traditions that they're pulling on that are ours, like, are safe. And so, like, you know, for long division, if we root that, you know, at that sentence contest, like, they pull in on fucking, like, our tradition, like, our tradition of extemporaneous speaking, our traditions of the freestyle,
yep.
our tradition of the dozens, you know, it's a battle royale put on stage. And then when we see that the shit is rigged and that these young Black characters are actually emotionally and psychologically being fucking terrorized by a neoliberal fucking, like, yep. you know, desire to fucking, like, grant Black kids something they could never, ever have, blah, blah, blah. What we don't see in that book is no grown people ever put their hands on those kids and say, let me talk to you about something, fam. It's going to be all right what you did. What happens is people are like, Obama wouldn't have done that.
Right.
Let me fucking, like, dip your ass in some water so the fucking devil can get up out of you.
Uh-huh.
Let me talk to you about how, like, you know, all the shit you did isn't going to get us some rights. And there's a lot of love in that book, too. But nobody ever talks to those kids about that exact, like, sight of terror. And I think sometimes in my experience in life, that's sort of been my experience. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When I fuck up, I've had a lot of people be like, you got to go get baptized. Let me talk to you about what happened in at Piney Woods School, blah, blah, blah. All of this kind of shit. But Gary told him that
the
I have
Piney gone. Woods.
You know the Piney Woods. You know Piney Woods. Yo, when I fucked up, it was like, fuck one more time, you going to Piney Woods. You know, those who know, but yeah, so.
Yeah. No, but okay, so this is like something that, and I'm, there's a way that I think over years you have really challenged me personally on this question, and it's something that I continue to struggle with, which is about this idea of discipline and where it sits, right? Because this is a part, this is a particular, it feels like to me, tell me if this is wrong, the part of what you're talking about is a kind of a discipline that is applied in our relationships to Black children and ourselves, right? That is a mode of managing right. white supremacy, right?
Right?
And one that is imagined, and maybe it's not, right, actually protective. It's imagined at least as protective, as an act of love that is also very much wounding.
Yes.
Right? And I'm just thinking, and so I don't, this is not like a clear question, but I'm thinking about, right, like, so, okay, go get saved. Or if you do this the right, you do this this way. Don't let them see you do this. Don't let, you know, don't let them project their ideas of what you are onto you.
Right.
Although sometimes what they think you are is what you are. And the problem is that they're wrong and thinking it's shameful.
That's
right?
it. That's it. That's it. That's
right?
it.
Yeah. But it's also, but it's not, but I also, like, the thing for me that is, that I feel like is important to say too, city is engaged in a discipline, in a stern discipline, as Ellison would say it.
Yeah, I think.
Just a different one, right? I mean, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, and I think that like at city's best, I would say best, other people might say worst, I think city is attempting to, like, walk outside the margins of what people have told him a good discipline is, right?
Right.
Like, you know, think about all of these characters, including City. City's like, LaVanna Pilla cares too much about white folks. Then he's talking to, you know, when he goes off on his, like, rant, he's like, man, fuck white folks. If you know, you know. And then he's talking to the old heads when he gets to Mila Hatchie, like, yo, y'all let white folks dictate. But then this motherfucker ends up wanting to read bedtime stories to a white dude who's chained up in a thing, right?
Yes.
So I'm trying to, I mean, and that to me is trying to be like, yes, like, discipline, pushback, because he's trying to, in his own way, discipline, like, the older people for, like, trying to discipline him. But at the same time, like, this panoptic, this kind of, like, terror,
yeah.
desire to seduce the seductive terrorist, like, he's not, that's him too.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I just think it was important for me to see him not just as one who is harmed and marginalized by discipline, but also an attempt at like remixing discipline and disciplining, you know what I mean? Like, and we see him, he tries to discipline the, you know, his Mexican classmates before they do anything. He tries to discipline them, the two Mexican brother and sister at the event, like, you know, and I hope that the book critiques that discipline.
Oh, it does.
Discipline.
Oh, yeah.
There, I just think, you know, I did not want to create some like cauldron of innocence who could look out at everybody and diss, because I've read those books and I don't like those books.
No.
But it's risky to do it the other way. It's a little risky, but you know, I don't know. Whatever.
No, I think, I think for me, the fact that he is, I mean, it seems sort of goofy to even say that he's imperfect. He's a kid, right? Of course he's imperfect, right? But in a sense, right, but that, you know, there's this moment where another kid says, you know, he said, any racism is kind of fun. And he's like, yeah, it kind of is.
Right.
Right. And, but that's really important. It's important for us too.
Yep.
Right. Because there's a lot of resentment. And to understand where it comes from doesn't mean that it's not real messy.
Yes. Very, very messy.
Right. So, right. And it cuts all kinds of ways. It cuts across lines of, you know, racialized groups, gender, sexuality, right, place, yeah, right, all these sorts of things. And so, no, I think, and it almost doesn't even have to function like a critique. It's just true.
Right. That's what I feel. That's what right? I feel. And what I think is maybe different than I was, or maybe in the city to number of people, is that he is open to listening to people talk to him about how, like, he's open to listening to discipline, right? Like, he wants to hear what you have to say about like how he operates in the world is wrong. And that to me is not like Pollyanna-ish, but like that to me, I was like, I wonder if this is like too, I wondered if I made him a little too kind of open in that way, because he's definitely a listener. He wants to understand.
Yeah.
But the thing about people who are children, especially who are very curious, is that like they weigh like a critique coming from this way that can be a fucking, like, you know, flowers and shit, and a critique coming from this way, which is a laser beam. Like, this kid is gonna value both of them the same.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that can lead to interesting art, but also it can lead to lots of like internal turmoil. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say also related to that, he's a listener, but he's right sometimes when grown folks aren't, in ways that are also, I think, are really important and less traditional, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, his grandmother is a beautiful and flawed, like all human beings are, right? It's yeah. it's a disruption of the way we talk about our grandmothers, right?
It kind of, I was trying, and it's hard for me,
but it makes her a real person who
right.
loves certain songs,
yeah,
who is angry and has desire. I mean, I haven't seen Black grandmothers who got to be full people too often in Black literature.
Right. And the sad thing about it is, like, I remember, I mean, I wrote that scene. I wrote the scene where City sleeps with his grandmother. He sleeps at his own right. house/apartment. He sleeps with his mom too. And so, you know,
which is also a thing for us, which we don't talk about
a lot. Right.
We do that. Yeah. Right. And sometimes many people in the same bed, but
absolutely.
Yeah.
But even the move to do that and not explain it isn't an invitation. Do you know what I mean? Like, we sleep, a lot of us slept with our grandmothers and our mothers, you know, and maybe our fathers, but definitely our grandmothers and our mothers and our aunties. And City is trying to work through desire, like that whole
yeah.
book, you know, whether it's you know, what people would consider like queer, or whether
right.
I mean, all of it is queer, like all of it is out the bounds. Like, he's wondering
yes.
why his grandmother makes him feel certain things. But then when he sees his grandmother not necessarily having her ass palmed by her man, but when he sees his grandmama palming
right.
his ass.
Right.
That's the thing. He's just like, no. This ain't what I signed up for, fam. Like,
yeah,
you ain't my grandmama. Like, You a straight up woman, G. Like, I thought you were my granny. But that's the move. That's where I want us to move to, because it's so easy. And I say this as a writer, like, I can write sentimental saccharine versions of my grandmother.
All I can write right?
that shit yeah. into $1 million tomorrow. No of question.
Of course.
That shit is dishonest, it's unfair, and it's fucked up. And like this grandmama, she got all of that shit, blah, blah. I can get on the couch and you want some sweet tea and come on here, let me take care of you.
But
she's also invested in trying to find desire. She's also invested in thinking about, yo, I really want to torture this white motherfucker back right. there. Oh, but y'all need to stop torturing her. But y'all, I really want to get this motherfucker. You know, like,
yeah.
I just think we don't create enough space for those type of older Black characters, whether they're grandmothers or not. And I just wanted to do it without giving her point of view. You know what I mean? Because she didn't have point of view. Like, City gets a point of view. So you kind of got to create shit that he doesn't understand that we might understand as readers.
But I thought that really worked too, because here's the thing. You're not going to hear, there's some folks whose grandmothers will tell it all, but most won't.
No.
You have to read the desire. Like, you have to look at the and watch them to read the complexity and the,
yes.
you know, right? Like, I remember my my grandmother saying once, she didn't curse, you know, and she never cursed. And we laughed and we were like, Medea, what you talking about? You curse? You say shit all the time. And she said, S-H-I-T is a bodily function. That's not a curse word. Like, this is what she said.
Okay. All
but
right,
you know, man. Like, so.
I know that one.
But it was, you know, there's a, because it's not safe. I think that's how I read it. I'm not a granny yet. But then it's not safe to be a full human being because you're holding up the whole world. And so.
Yeah.
Right.
But we watch the patterns, right? Like, my granny, right? I mean, I allude to this in a few pieces I've written, but I haven't written directly into it. But my grandmama was obsessed with Dukes of Hazzard, right? Partially because it was down south, obsessed with Hee Haw, and obsessed with Dallas.
All right? of the above.
Which on the surface, you would be like, wait a minute now. But, you know, and not only obsession, but again, I just think we have to look at like the signs and markers of desire. So on Dukes of Hazzard, if you remember, not like there was two Duke boys. One was blonde, one was dark hair. The dark hair,
Bo and Luke.
So Luke was the, which one was the dark hair one? Was it Luke?
Yeah.
Oh, he was Luke.
I believe
okay.
so. Yeah, yeah.
So Luke kind of resembled this other brother who was on Trapper John M.D., this white brother on Trapper John M.D. Not Trapper John, but the...
No, you said the young...
young dude.
I know what you're talking about, right? Blue hair. Scrubs, yeah.
Yeah. And so anytime my granny would watch Trapper John M.D. or watch Dukes of Hazzard, whenever fucking Luke would be on screen or this brother from Trapper John, she'd just go... You know, it took me decades to understand that granny was letting her body know, and her body was letting her know that she liked whatever the fuck that
right.
was on that screen. But she wouldn't say it, fam.
Right,
she
right.
wouldn't say, oh, that's a fine motherfucker right there. Or she wouldn't right. be like, what's his name? Or she just and I think, yeah, like, so grandmama not gonna talk to me about the word desire. But she's gonna love me enough to show desire in front of me. I just got to do the work as an artist to do something with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I love that those examples too, because one of the things, and I've been trying to write about it, is, you know, we were coming up, Black folks on TV were Northern.
Yes.
The South, if it was Southern, it was white.
Yep.
But you could only, there's certain things you weren't gonna hear. I mean, even there were, you know, there were citations, right? So like, you know, Good Times, they talk about,
right.
you know, coming up from Mississippi. But like, so we, you know, yeah, we watched Hee Haw, we watched Dukes of Hazzard, Beverly Hillbillies, you know, and that's
yes.
kind of different. But yeah, but that was, there, it, that's also like part of how I read that moment. There's these moments of violence and these moments of intimacy across Black and white in the novel. And that's the reality of what it is.
I know, and again, like, you know, we live it, so it's hard to not see it. But I think, you know, living up north for a while, I forgot how intimate like Black folk and white folk are And I think that intimacy is also why I feel like what's happening where we're from is a different kind of catastrophe, because when there's intimacy, there's possibility, right? There's possibility for lots of things, possibility for terror, there's possibility for buildings, possibility for revolution, possibility for terror. And that intimacy with Black folk and white folk down south, I mean, we have all the necessary ingredients.
Yep.
Well, for revolution. It's there, right? But
and that's, and also, you know, one of the things I love is there, and I'm gonna go to the questions because there's a lot of questions, but I have so many things I want to talk to you about. I can talk to you about some of them other, but yeah. You are attentive to region, like the specificity, because there's also a way in which, you know, a state like Mississippi gets flattened. Actually Dave Dennis Jr. says something about it on Facebook the other day, like how different the different and so there's, and it comes out in these like beautiful little details, like, you know, when City encounters the the neo-Confederate white boys and they ask about his name, they say, well, you must be from New Orleans, as opposed, he's, no, I'm from Jackson, but like, where's the big city in relationship to the small town where they are? Or like, you know, or also that, you know, cities like Jackson are also migration destination. Like the Great Migration happened inside the South.
That's it. I mean, and that, for us in Mississippi, like we are at once like reckoning and grieving with the fact that like our people left. Like if you live in rural Mississippi, your people left. They left the state.
Yeah.
And some of your other people left and went to New Orleans, Memphis, or Jackson.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And so growing up in Jackson, it's very interesting to grow up in a city where people write about it all the time as people leaving Jackson, going to Chicago, when I understood Jackson as a young person as a site of migration.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
I know people were coming from Mount Bayou, from Fars. Some people were coming from the Delta, you know, because in real talk, we don't talk about like, you know, what cities afforded those people. I mean, I interviewed a lot of queer Black folks who were like, I had to get the fuck out of Pascagoula. I had to get the fuck out of Pisgah. Like, I wanted to come to Jackson because I thought I could be free. So the same reason that people went, not the same, but a similar reason people went to Chicago, Illinois, shit, even California for like a lot of those defense jobs, a lot of motherfuckers just came to Jackson.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And so, what you get in Jackson is like, you get a city filled with Black people who have one foot in urban Mississippi and an entire foot and ass in rural Mississippi.
Yeah.
And that straddling is our experience.
Yeah.
You know, but I think people misread it. So then they ultimately miswrite it, you know, and I was just not trying to write it right, but just write it differently.
Right. Well, and I mean, the same thing also with, migrant labor, I was thinking about, right? Because it's like, you know, when they're, you know, the migration of Mexican and Central American immigrants through the South, it like, it's almost as though people forget that Black people did migrant labor too. Like that there's, that there's, you know, and so that moment when City acts ugly, but part of what he's, you know, grappling with is like, okay, now you're here too, and we've been here doing the exact same thing. You know, like when you eat, think about like, you know, whatever, chicken, catfish farms, like all of that stuff, right? It's, so we're still here, and now there's more people, and we're still, like that's a complicated.
And that's chapters in Monty. Man, I love talking to you, fam. Like, those are chapters that I took out of the first draft of the book, because the book initially was like so much about the relationship between, I mean, it wasn't placed on the coast. It was placed in Central Mississippi, where my grandmother's from. And the relationship with like her relationship with one Cuban man and one Mexican woman. And like the first people to like migrate and like come into the chicken plants where my grandmother worked were Cubans. Like people they called excludable aliens. Like they were Cuban. They weren't Mexican. They were Cuban. And then those white folks started bringing trucks and trucks of Mexican folks to come, treating them like shit, trying to create like rifts and shit between the Black folk. And my grandmama was one of these people. You know, you talk about complications. You know, a lot of people are like, hey, we got to fight against these. And my grandma was like, shit, you got to work harder. You know what I'm saying? Like, because, and she said that partially because like, when Mexican folks came into work at the plant, like they lived directly next to us. Like our when the raids happened, when Trump sent them raids in, our neighbors got raided. Like they took fucking like our neighbors away from their children. Yeah. So you talk about intimacy, and that's the thing about when you live in places like Alabama, Mississippi, it's not just like intimacy with white folks. It's an intimacy with like definitely Central American Mexican folks.
Yep.
The question is like, what we gonna do with it?
We
gonna do
That's
something.
Always the question.
I think we gonna do something. I do. I believe it with all my heart. But yes,
so that's the only hope.
Yes.
And I mean, not just the only hope for the. I mean, the only hope for the country, right? I mean, this is why I think that's where it has to happen, right? Where the grounds.
Yep.
Right, grounds. Okay. Yep. So these questions. So. I love this question. Who are the best time travelers you know?
I mean, it almost sound like a homer, bro, but you, I mean, that's the thing when people talk about people, the thing about genre is like, if you look at genres, timestamps, and so you look at someone who does a biography of Lorraine, you look at someone who does an actual like, what people call a memoir directly addressed to two of their children. You look at someone who does like Prophets of the Hood, you know, who's looking at the Black National Anthem, who's looking at gender theory. Like that to me is beyond like being, you know, beyond like you always say, being hard-headed, not doing what people want you to do. There's also like a desire to fucking operationalize different time periods.
Right.
Here.
Yeah.
So Imani, no doubt. And Tony Cade for
yes.
me.
Yes.
I read Tony Cade, fam. I still feel like that shit is from the future and from like the origins of time, like the beginning. Like to me, Tony Cade, Bambara, and Imani are the best time travelers I know.
Oh, thank you. Well, I love to have that's a deep honor to have her name alongside mine. But I feel the same. And also, there's a it's actually I can read her in you in that there's an enormous courage in her. Work like she dares to imagine.
Yeah.
That sounds hokey, but it really is. You know, I think most of us are always looking behind our shoulders about like, well, can I imagine all the way, because who might think this, who might
right.
you know? And she's like, let's imagine, right?
This right.
you know, and I it just it's one of those, because work like that you read and you feel possibility, right?
Yeah, I feel so much possibility. I mean, I always tell people, you know, read the first sentence of Gorilla My Love and stop. You know what I'm saying? You know that fucking potato chip commercial, motherfuckers like, can't just eat them. Like, how dare you, motherfucker? Read the first sentence of that joint and don't read anymore. Like, it's impossible. But that's not just because, you know, she was like organically, blah, blah, blah. Like she understood rhythm and propulsion.
Yeah.
And real talk, like to do understand rhythm and propulsion, those things are marked by time. Like those are time register things, you know? I mean, you know this so much because like the way you taught us how to understand time and Prophets of the Hood, but I just think sometimes we don't think enough about the way time and time registers are important. Just like the space between words is, I think, far more important than the actual words themselves. Like the space tells you how to fucking understand the context of every single word we read. Tony Kaye, like, makes me remember that more than any other writer.
Well, that's the other thing, because you get to that meeting ground between words and math, right? So it's right. not incidental that this book is called Long Division, right? Like this, because rhythm is math.
Time is math. It is. And they're like, you know, and Shalaya Crump is, you know, they're like, you so long division.
Why, oh, I love that part.
Why you so long division? You know, like, they like, because long division, you know, I was one of the motherfuckers who like, I can do math in my head. So I'm like, fuck the work. I'm not trying to, you know, I was a terrible student because I was just like, I can do multiplication in my head. I can do division in my head.
So, right. Why would I show my steps? Yeah.
What the fuck I'm going to show my work for? First of all, I don't trust you, teacher. But the book is like, no, like, let's show every step along the way. But more importantly, let's talk about every step. That's what that book is actually. Let's talk about every single step. Because, you know, I come from academics and thoughtful people. And understandably, there were many steps along the way that my people were afraid to talk to me about.
Yeah.
And I don't think I or they were better for that. And so I'm just saying, let's do long division, y'all. Like those of us who report to love each other. But let's slow down and like look at every single step along the way.
That's what I love, because when City says, you know, I enjoy doing the work, and Shalay is like, I'm saying something different, basically. I'm talking about lingering in the steps.
Yes.
Right? Like, not just the building blocks, but, and I just thought, oh, that's profound, right? You, that's how you understand something. Okay. So one, another one of the questions is, which is something that we all want to ask you all the time, is about the process of revision. You say revision, you know, writing is revision.
Yeah.
Also, and they asked, though, did you get pushback from your publisher?
Did I get pushback?
For doing the...
I mean, no, I didn't get pushback. I mean, you know, books are reissued all the time. You go to another publisher, sometimes you bring books with you. So, like, what I'm doing isn't new. Like, I mean, books get reissued all the time, but because this book was going to be reissued, I did want to not just change the package, but actually change the contents. And it's so ironic, like Read and Breathe and thinking about breath. Like I wanted the characters and I wanted the readers to be able to breathe a bit more. I don't think it makes it like less like rigorous or anything like that, but I do think that book necessitated breath, and the way that it was laid out before, it was, you gonna have to sneak them breaths up in there, you know, like if you were gonna breathe, you had to like that, you know, like now I just think it's like, all right, now let me go into this other section. Let me. And so for me, I like, the question was, how do I reconfigure this book and make it breathe? Also ethically, you know, like I wrote out words in that book that I don't say, but I've never said the F word. I've never said the B word to a human being. Like,
right.
So like, I just thought about like, why do these words exist in there? There are a number of words like that. And so I wanted to take those words out because I was trying to pass as like a literary writer by keeping the words in. Do you know what I'm trying to say? These are just examples of what one can do with revision, but the desire to ethically go back and reconsider all the ingredients and the scope of what we're doing, that's a religion to me. That's a lifetime thing for me. And it's something I definitely do with my art.
That's so interesting to think about. Also, the like one of the things that I noticed is that citoyen,
yes,
is recedes and city
is at yes.
before, right? Yes. Like, so there's not, I don't know how to describe, there weren't, I didn't feel like there were two names or two halves to him.
They're not. I mean, I'm not supposed to tell people that, but you know, I mean, I always say there's a person, there's a persona, there's a superego in everybody.
Yeah.
And at different times, like we foreground one and foreground the other. We tell stories foregrounding one or foregrounding the other. But I think there are at least three characters in this book who have persona, superegos. City and Bays are two. And then there's another character. So like, yeah, like I think they recede. I don't think they're different people. I think they're the same people who take turns foregrounding different personalities.
I also think Bays is another example of an incredibly just beautiful rendering of a Black girl.
That's so sweet to say, man. I appreciate that.
I mean, really. No, but I mean, that's hard. I mean, it's another thing that's very hard to do when she's not a type.
Right. We talked about that before, about,
Okay, so a couple other questions. What, I'm gonna ask you a couple and you decide which ones you want to ask. So one is about who are you reading? And the other is, does the white gaze affect your process?
So, you know, I'm reading a lot. Before we got on, we were just talking about Liberty. Caitlin Greenidge's book. So I read that I read that for some months ago. I'm reading, what did I read yesterday? Yesterday I read, I read this ill book by Jesse Daniels called Nice White Ladies. I can't wait for y'all to read that mug. Okay. That joke is gonna do some stuff. And also, I've been rereading The Color Purple for the last few weeks. because I'm writing a new introduction to that book, and that shit is holy. Y'all, go back and read The Color Purple, y'all. Like, I feel like we forget.
Yep.
Please go back and read The Color Purple.
And it's interesting what we forget about it.
Yes.
It's just extraordinary.
So I've been reading a lot, but those are the books the last 2 days that I've been like sitting in real hard.
Can I just ask, just follow up to that point about The Color Purple? Because one of the things that I think Alice Walker does, and she has different forms. I mean, I think in some ways, Meridian has this too, but she makes art out of language, which very few people can do while the language still sounds right.
Right. And it's so interesting to, you know, like, it's so interesting to people who get sort of like, it's held against them for being, we've talked about this privately, but I feel like Black women, more than any other group in the world, get it like their expertise and like incredibleness gets held against them. So when you talk about The Color Purple, you know, textbook epistolary novel. But motherfuckers will talk about the characters as if they're real, sometimes at the expense of the creator. You know what I mean? I mean,
absolutely.
For the film, but you know, y'all, Sepha, or if you look at Beloved, even like I think sometimes people like these characters who mean some shit to us. We forget that like these motherfuckers, yes, they haunt the writer, but they had to be rendered, fam. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like they have to render. And so like I just think sometimes I'm looking at last 2 weeks I was reading Beloved because I'm trying to do something with Beloved and The Color Purple. But I think similarly, like we just forget sometimes when the characters come off the page so much that they actually like were constructed and created. And I just feel like we owe Alice Walker more than to forget. You know?
I agree. And I think in some ways. There's a different move that's been made with Toni, which is she's an icon. So it's a different way of forgetting.
Yes.
Right, the mastery. So, right, like either it's like, it's so real, it's not seen as a work of art, or it's, you know, you're an iconic figure, right? And so we see her face, I think, sometimes more often than we see.
And that's why I think, you know, those conversation books, like Conversation with Ball and Conversations with Morrison. I think those conversation books, they're hit or miss, but like The Conversation with Morrison, ooh, y'all. That's another one. Like, I think University of Mississippi publishes that series, but like, I think if you think you love Morrison, like do yourself opportunity to read the interviews and to read the way her points of view change based not just on time, but on the person that's interviewing her.
Yeah. You
know what I mean? I think reading interviews, we get to grant her some complexity that we don't because we see her as the sky, you know?
Yeah. So this is actually it's a question from Trey Johnson. He says, I'm gonna read the whole thing. I feel like one of the unifiers around the migration that's happened between North and South has been the digital world that Black people have created for ourselves. Can you talk about what Black digital worlds you've experienced? And if you think there's things that you're seeing what we create in the digital space that can be translated to the real world as a more unified Black experience.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the digital space isn't a real space. You know what I mean? Like, first of all, what's up, Trey? We both love you, fam. But one of the things that I, you know, if we're gonna locate this in literature, I mean, one of the things that Morrison talks about is the importance of village literature, right? Like you create literature for other members of the village. This also speaks to that question about white gazes. So if I'm in a village and I'm talking to other villagers, like I can still tell stories that have something to do with like white gazes. Like that is a different and artful creation than talking to the white gaze. I think what digital spaces allow us to do, if we think about the village metaphor, is we're still often writing and talking to and for one another. We do need to think about like the panopticon and think about who's watching and blah, 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 blah. And
say,
you know, we have to, but I also don't want to short sell the fact that I'm not here talking to Imani Perry without the internet. for whatever
right.
reason,
right.
This industry
how we get
did not think that I had anything of value to give to anybody else. And they probably still don't. But I went to the internet and I started talking to my village. My village started talking back. And the white folks were like, we think we can make some money off of that.
Yeah.
When I'm talking to my village, I'm talking to my village. Sometimes I talk to my village sincerely about shit that's in my heart. Sometimes I talk to my village sincerely about how like white folks need to stop. Right. Now, but what I try not to do is talk directly to like, you know, this white normative blah, blah, blah. But it's hard when they publish your books. When they edit your shit, I love my editor. When they edit your shit, you know, when they're your agents, I love my agents. Right. Like, so I'm just trying to say it's difficult. It's not pure, you know, it's right. a bargain. But I think right. we have to like do what Shalaya was saying. Let's like linger in all of the steps of the bargain. But I think the digital space, the way we've done it, has allowed us to talk to each other, create art that we would have never created before.
So is that, and that's related to also to the question about the white gaze. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because I think it's an interesting question to me because, you know, I would say I identify as a Pan-Africanist politically, but I right. think it's okay for us to be really different, right? Like, I don't take that as a for granted to Blackness that we will necessarily be unified
yes.
beyond the political commitment that I personally have adopted and I want more people to adopt, right? Like, yes. This the construction of Blackness, right, in under the ideology of white supremacy and empire has been a place where beautiful things have been able to be born despite, and so wanting us to share yeah. that, but we are Love very it. Different even when we talk to each other on the internet.
Right? We are, we definitely, and the other part, the others probably won't get into it, but like, yeah, like, you know, as these digital spaces are along longer, you see sometimes the language gets muted, right? And you like you see like the shorthand. That's why, like, yeah, like I'm not dissing the LOLs and all that kind of shit, but like I'm scared of that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? I'm scared of the shorthand and the shit that we start to use when but anyway,
can I tell you?
I don't know. I talked about all that.
Really quick, I'm gonna ask the last question of you in a minute, but what that made me think of is the Yin Yang twins and when they would say skeet skeet, and so that word, and so like I had a student who was talking about, you know, her mother said it and she was like, you don't know what that is, and I was like, skeet just means ricochet. It just means a little, I said, so they were using the word in a particular sense, but it's yeah. a word. It's not,
right.
So like, it's this moment where, okay, everybody knows that song in the Black, but not everybody knows that word in Black America, man. Not much less the larger Black world, right?
But the ill thing to when you say that, Imani, is how, even though all of our shit is proliferated, all this digital shit, people can come in there and watch. I wrote on the internet the other day when somebody was like, I said, you know you in a bad place when you say, I know that's right. And somebody was like, how? Right? Because like when we hear, I know that's right. Like yes. we know, I don't give a fuck where you from, Wichita, right. motherfucker, like deep ass Florida. Right. If you a Black motherfucker, you be like, I know that's right. Like,
right.
But there, I know white folks who are still like, I tried to say that shit and they were like, I was like, this isn't, I said, I know that's right. And they're like, how do you know? Like,
wait, what?
Excuse me? I know that's right. But then I have to read, I'm like, oh, okay. Like they just looked at the word. The context is fucking like invisible to them, even in the era of the internet, right? So I'm just trying to say there's yep. certain things that like, this is the layers. Beauty of what mm-hmm. we do. The layers, fam. Yeah. And you don't have to go through a class to know that there are layers to some of what we
that's
do.
That's right. That's right. Okay, we have time for one more question, which I love. What in nature brings you joy?
Oh, man, that's one of them weepy ones. I like listening to water. I like being close to water and listening to water, like listening to, I don't even know the language to talk about, like, you know, what the things that live in the water are doing, what the wind is doing to the water, what people are doing. I'm one of those Black people who can't swim, but I don't know how to drown. I also don't know how to swim. But I just love listening to water. Like, I need that in my life right this second, actually. Like, I like listening to water. So, you know, that's it. Thank you for that's this, Imani. Like, I feel like, man, like, you know how much I think about you, and the fact that you would read that book and talk to me about this shit is the most, it's sort of like the most crazy shit in my world. I ain't gonna lie to you, but thank you. Thank you.
And I want to say thank you. I mean, thank you for me personally, because, you know, long ago when I read the first iteration of this, that it was a gift. I said this to you already, but I want to say it in front of all these people. I knew you were a genius then. And more importantly, a person who is good and feels and loves Black people in particular, but loves human beings. Because that's the heart of it, right? Like, it's a lot of people who can do brilliant things, but when you put them in the service of love, it's different. Right. That's when it really matters. So
that's when it matters. Thank you, fam. I appreciate this.
And thank you, everybody who's been on.
Thank y'all for spending a Tuesday night or whatever night this is. Is it Tuesday? Right.
It's Tuesday. Yes. All right. Thank you, y'all. Get the book.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/author-events.